Welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. This week, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, Today I Learned, where we get some really questionable parenting advice from the past. And we close the show with our BFPs and BFNs. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is episode 79. Hello, Shauna.
Hi.
Hi. So do you want to just jump right in? Tell me how old your baby is and what you guys have been up to this week.
Yes, she is 11 months and 4 weeks.
Oh, it's one of those weird weeks, right? The little bonus weeks, yeah.
Which means her first birthday is just around the corner, but I can't report on that quite yet.
So close.
What she's been up to this week is walking like crazy. It has just taken off.
Really?
She's really interested in walking and working on her balance, preferring walking over crawling now. And I think it's because she's gotten really good at standing up from the floor, just from nothing. You know, she doesn't have to pull up on anything anymore. She just kind of like puts her butt up in the air and then like lifts her upper body up and suddenly she's in a standing position and then mm-hmm. she can toddle around.
Yeah, she doesn't have to use some other surface to get up in the standing position.
Yeah, and she just loves that. She's practicing that like crazy. And so I'm trying to baby-proof a little bit more. I got some clear corner covers for a bunch of the corners in my living room, which I love. They would be a BFP, but I'm mentioning them now, and I can link to them in the show notes. They're really great. So I've done that because, as I mentioned before, our yes space is just kind of the whole living room now, so she gets free reign of that while I'm working. So lots of exposed corners that I needed to cover.
Cause, you know, how many come in a pack? Is it like you get a good number for a lot of corners?
Yeah, I think you get like 20 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I covered a lot of corners because she's not great at it yet. I mean, she can take a lot of steps, but mm-hmm. she still loses her balance and tips over a lot and stuff.
Yeah, that seems like a danger zone, like right when they're figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's see what else. Well, her first birthday party is coming up, and as I mentioned, I have endeavored to make her a cake from scratch.
That's right.
Yeah.
The rainbow cake.
Yes, that's the idea, rainbow cake. And I have been working with Elle to make a practice cake. Elle is interested in baking, I think mostly because she absolutely loves sugar and just wants to eat everything every step of the way. But I'm just like, that's okay, give me that mama-daughter time. And so I practiced making the cake, and it turned out okay. I learned some things, and I will be making it again for her first birthday party. And hopefully it turns out okay, and I can share pictures.
Okay, so I need a few details. So, like, you're doing the thing where you make like a little sheet cake, but in all the different colors? Is that how it works?
That's the idea, yeah. And it's not a sheet cake, it's a round
cake. Round cake.
8-inch round, and you dye a certain amount of batter in every color of the rainbow. Instead of red, I use pink. And instead of green, I use teal because I like more of the jewel tones as opposed to primary colors. Mm-hmm. So there's 6 layers, one for every color, pink, orange, yellow, teal, blue, and purple. And yeah, so hopefully when you cut into it, you'll see like a little rainbow cake inside.
That's
I mean,
so awesome.
I'm just like so excited about this. I cannot tell you how thrilled like colorful shit makes me. It's just bananas. Just like the thought of how colorful this vision of mine is just like, I'm almost like buzzing on the edge of my seat. I'm so excited. I'm such a nerd.
Give me those rainbows.
Yes. As we talked about before, like Lisa Frank, bright colors, mm-hmm. love that shit. So anyway, so that's going well. And then the last little thing is so cute. She's old enough now that we can do sister bubble bath, put the two girls in one bathtub with tons of bubbles. And it's just so fun and so cute. And I just love it. It's have a sibling just so you can have sibling bubble baths.
That's the main reason to have another kid?
Yes, that's it.
Does Elle like scoop the bubbles up and put them on Cece's head?
Yes, and she puts them all over her face and makes a big beard. And mm-hmm. Cece cracks up laughing. She thinks it's so hilarious. And just a lot of shenanigans like that, for sure.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah, it's so sweet. But yeah, this is my last few days with my baby before she's officially 1 year old. And it's a weird feeling moving out of this first year of her life is like, whoa.
So are they officially toddlers? Like 12 months are like, boom, no long. I know they're no longer infants, but mm-hmm. like, I guess baby isn't really a technical term.
Yeah, she still feels like a baby for sure. Mm-hmm. I think they technically become toddlers when they start walking.
That makes sense.
So I officially have a toddler now.
You do? Oh my gosh. My yeah. guy's still a little ways away from that. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay. So that's us. What about you guys? How old is your baby? What's going on?
So he's 11 months, so I got to take my little 11-month photo with him, which was very cute. And the fun thing is that now I have 12 photos because I have like the 1 week and then the 11 months. So it can make like a nice grid. I put them all together and it's like, whoa. You can when you put them all together, and I've been doing pretty good about putting him on the same quilt. There was that mm-hmm. quilt I made out of the craft we did at my baby shower where everyone decorated a little quilt square and I put them together. And so you can really see him getting bigger. And I'll post that to Instagram because it's super interesting to look at, just like scanning across and seeing the rapid growth of a baby. And he's just, I don't know, he's seeming like such a big boy. And, you know, it's funny talking about walking because I was convinced he was going to be an early walker based on all of his other like motor skill development. You know, he was an early sitter. He was an early, you know, he had crazy head control basically when he was a newborn, like when he was I have a picture of him like 3 days old holding his head up. And
what?
Yeah, I do. I should, that it's crazy. Like on, he's on his tummy, you know, he's like on, I think my mom's chest and he has his head like all the way up. It's crazy. So all those things, I was like, oh man, he's going to be one of those early walkers, but it hasn't really panned out that way. And I'm okay with it. Honestly, like the more I think about it, I'm more like, why do I want an early walker? Like it's just going to wreak havoc on my life. But also I think because he's become so good at crawling, he can crawl so fast. He has like no incentive to walk. Yeah. He's, you know, I see him every once in a while let go and try to balance standing. And then he's like, what am I doing? Get down on my, you know, like I can get all the way over there in 3 seconds flat. Yeah. Why am I doing this? So, but so that's where we're sort of at with the motor development, but I'm totally fine with it. It's not like he's not ever going to walk and it's just going to make my life harder when he does. So So he can stay a little baby a little longer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just pretty smooth sailing over here as far as the baby front goes. But I had a revelation this week, a personal insight that I wanted to share.
Yeah. What's that?
And it happened when, so I've started having a babysitter come like once a week, occasionally twice a week. I need to set up a more regular schedule, but I'm waiting for my garage conversion to be done. So I'll have it's getting converted into an office. It's really close to being done. And once that's done, I can actually set up a regular schedule and have like office time. But until that's done, what I've been doing, like basically, I think he was probably 3 or 4 months old. I started accepting just a little tiny bits of gigs here and there. And I've talked about this on the podcast, you know, and how crazy it is to have to work when he's napping or after his bedtime. It's exhausting. He doesn't let me get any work done when he's awake, like none whatsoever. I can't even answer an email, you know, on my computer. I can't sit at my computer when he's awake. He's just like, mommy, mommy, mommy. So I have to do it when he's asleep or someone else is taking care of him. And the problem is I don't have my own office space. So even with the babysitter, I have to like hide in the bedroom because if I even just like go out to get a glass of water and he sees me, he goes from being totally fine with the babysitter who he likes a lot to like crying and reaching for me, you know?
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah. So that's the background. I was hiding from my baby in my bedroom trying to work like with my laptop on my lap. And I was feeling super, super stressed because I had agreed to do this site build. It was like not a full site build, but I had agreed to do some work on a website and had a tight deadline. And I had other people emailing asking when I was going to like be available to do more work. And we had the podcast to edit and the podcast to record. And I was just getting so anxious and like, how can I get all this done? Not to mention the massive to-do list I have of like housework. You know, the folding laundry, doing dishes, sweeping the damn floor because the baby's crawling all over it, all that stuff. And I was just really like ramping myself up with my sort of anxiety. And I'm a person who I hit deadlines. I hate missing deadlines for people. Like I'm an obliger. You know, if someone else is giving me a deadline, I feel horrible if I have to miss it. Mm-hmm. So that was adding to it. And here's the revelation I finally had as I was hiding in the bedroom. All this time, I've been thinking of myself as a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to figure out why, like, it's been so stressful for me. And I suddenly realized I'm not a stay-at-home mom. I'm a work-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I've been completely diminishing the work I've been doing because it's not like full time and it's sporadic. Mm-hmm. And also I think because it's the podcast and like, you know, the podcast is a lot of work. We put it out every week. We edit it every week. We have sponsors now that we have to, you know, interface with and do all this stuff. And, you know, we loved it. Honestly, if I could just work on the podcast full time, like that's what I would love.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So listeners, tell all your friends about it so we can do that. but unfortunately, I can't. But, you know, and so I was thinking like, oh, the podcast is just this little, you know, side project of ours, even though it's a really big deal and we're doing really well with it and we're, you know, it's really should be a main focus of ours. And then it's like, well, it's just a part-time gig I picked up. It's, you know, a 3-week deadline. So it's not really a real job. And I've been completely not giving myself credit for the work I've been doing at all. And no wonder I'm in a constant state of anxiety because I'm expecting myself to behave like a stay-at-home mom, which is also incredibly hard work, like incredibly hard work. But on top of it, in all my free time, I'm working for other people or working for the podcast.
Right.
And it's like, of course I'm losing my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, how am I supposed to, you know, and all, honestly, just reframing it, like giving myself the permission to say like, no, my work is important. And that's why the dishes get piled up. And that's why the floor doesn't get swept, you know, because it's not just some like little side projects I'm doing. It's a real thing. Like I'm really working. Mm-hmm. It's not just for fun or whatever.
So the revelation is giving you some leeway to be kinder with yourself for letting like household things go, or how is it affecting your mental state?
Yeah, I think just it's such a minor shift in the reframing, right? But knowing that instead of just staying at home with the baby, which a lot of people are asking, are you home with the baby? And I'm like, yeah, but you know, like, yeah, but I'm also doing this and this and this. It's a very weird, I'm in a weird place where there's not a lot of definition for it. But so for me, defining it in my mind as I'm a work-at-home mom means that, yeah, it's giving me permission to understand why other things are sliding.
Right.
And also asking for more help. You know, I was feeling bad trying to get this babysitter to come regularly. I was like, oh, you know, it's expensive. And I don't know what I like what I thought I was going to do. Like, it's so funny because Corey was like, you should go get a massage while the babysitter's there. And I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, I have every minute of that babysitter's time scheduled out in a massive to-do list, you know? Like, you should go to Pilates while the, you know, I haven't been to Pilates in months. And like, I'd like to. It's like, you should go to the Pilates while the babysitter's there. It's like, no, no, that is a waste. I mean, it's not a waste of time, but like, I don't have time for that, you know?
Right.
If I was a stay-at-home mom, I would have time for that, I guess, you know, or I could do the other stuff like go grocery shopping. I mean, that's also on my list. So anyway, I'm trying to give myself more permission to ask for help, to respect what I'm doing, you know, to respect that the work I'm doing is real work.
Yeah.
And, you know, just try to get on track a little bit more with not feeling overwhelmed by everything, like recognizing I can't behave like a stay-at-home mom when I'm a work-at-home mom. Not that stay-at-home mom isn't work, but you know what I mean? I'm doing both. Like, I can't be both right now.
Yeah.
And you are, so you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. It's my life. It was my life for a long time with Elle, too. And I remember in the beginning when I first started taking work, it was part-time. And I did kind of just think, oh, you know, I can take care of a baby and work part-time. And then it started, like, getting hard. And I also was like, maybe I need a babysitter. But I don't want to spend money on a babysitter because I'm making money working. And I mean, I was going crazy. I went to, like, a co-working place with childcare. And all those little things started helping. But it was hard to justify, especially because I wasn't working full-time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have, like, that steady income. It was – I think it's a lot harder to accept when you are working part-time, but you're still doing it. You're still working. You're still at home with the baby. Like, that's what you are. So I understand why you've had a hard time coming around to that, but I'm glad you did and that you're giving yourself some permission to ask for help and being easier on yourself now. That's awesome.
Thanks, Shauna. Yeah, I think also this was a problem before I had a baby. No one understood what the hell I did. You know, like when you're a freelancer, trying to explain what you do is hard. You know, people are, well, you work for yourself? Oh, so you sleep in and, you know, take off in the middle of the day? It's like, well, sometimes, yeah. But usually, you know, before I had the baby, I was working a lot, you know, pretty much the same hours as you work in when you go to an office and sometimes more. And, you know, you have clients that if you don't answer their emails in the morning, you know, they're not going to be okay with being like, oh, well, I slept until noon and then, you know, like it's a real job. So, So then adding on, like, I'm home with the baby and trying to explain my weird, like, cobbled together work is, it's hard to explain to people. So I think I've definitely gotten that outside feedback outside message from people being like, well, you're home with the baby and it's just too hard to explain. Like, I remember trying to explain to my stepdad the podcast. And he was like, well, how long do you spend on the podcast a week? And I'm like, you know, a good amount of time. You know, we record every week. I edit every week. Shauna writes the copy. Like, it's not a small thing. But they all think it's, I don't know. It's hard for people to understand. They're starting to understand now that we're getting, like, listener numbers that we can, you know, announce on Facebook and stuff. And they're like, oh, okay, you have actual listeners. So thank you, listeners, for validating us.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so the point is, I am trying to reset.
Point is, you're busy as shit, lady.
I'm busy as shit, man.
Oh my God. How come in our last week's episode, neither of us characterized 2019 as busy? I mean, that really should have been my number one thing. I am just busy, busy, busy.
I just feel like there's this cult of busy in the U.S., so I try not to, like, overemphasize how busy I am because it's, like, it's almost a point of pride sometimes. People are like, oh, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. And busy, I don't aim to be busy. I don't want to be busy. I want to be centered and organized. I don't, busy to me means like you have a million balls in the air you're juggling and, you know, you can't quite keep up with everything.
Sounds like my life.
So I aim to not be busy. I aim to be productive.
Oh,
but, yeah.
There you go.
But
that's
anyway,
a good reframing.
But yeah, but I am fucking busy. Anyway, shall we take some cleansing deep breaths and move on to our special segment?
I think so.
Okay.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids. But you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why Storyworth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give Storyworth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted Storyworth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too, and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at oneskin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP.
We are back, and this week we have our special segment, Today I Learned, where we share things that we have recently learned about parenting, motherhood, babies, pregnancy, etc. Laura, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I have an article from Scientific American. It's actually from November 2004, but it still holds up, I believe. I don't think the science has changed on this. And the title of it is a pregnant woman's chance of giving birth to a boy 50%?
Oh.
So I was thinking about this because when I started Mommy and Me, when my baby was like 3 months old, there was a group of, I want to say 13 or 14 of us, and there were two girls in the entire group. I can't remember, but I don't remember the total number, but I remember there were two girls. And we were all like, what? This is weird. Why are there so many boys, right? So I started looking it up, and it turns out, is a pregnant woman's chance of giving birth to a boy 50%? The answer is nope. that for every 100 girls born in most industrialized countries, there are 105 boys.
Okay.
So this is known as the secondary sex ratio.
Uh-huh.
So there's like the primary sex ratio and the secondary sex ratio. The primary ratio is the number of boys compared to girls at conception. Mm-hmm. And then the secondary sex ratio, or how many are actually born. And I guess boy fetuses are more susceptible to problems. Well, we all know girls are stronger than boys, right? This is as a boy mom, but, you know, like, come on, girl power. But it's apparently true that, so I guess the male fetus is more susceptible to problems in the womb. Mm-hmm. So, like, more boys are conceived. And then because prenatal care has gotten better, there's more boys being born now. Because it used to be like there would be losses because the boys were weaker, basically, more susceptible to illness and whatnot. But now, you know, there's prenatal care that's better. That's what they're guessing, at least. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the ratio is different a long time ago, when before prenatal care and stuff.
Well, no. So, you know, the goal was probably the goal of evolution is 50-50 probably, right? Or maybe a little more boys than girls. But because we're getting better prenatal care, it's getting skewed because the boys who might not have been strong enough to make it without good prenatal care make it now. So there's so many more boys. And so what's also interesting is that there's like environmental factors that can also affect it. They're still trying to figure out exactly why more boys are being born than girls. But here's something that might interest you. Hopeful mothers taking Clomid for infertility bore babies with a SSR of only 48.5%. So that means that there are more girls born to Clomid moms.
Interesting.
Which is like much different than the 50.1%. So like it's a pretty big skew.
Yeah, because my Clomid baby was a girl.
It was.
But this does raise, this does raise my question. When I went through IVF, I actually was lucky enough to produce a lot of eggs and have a lot of embryos created, and I sent them off for genetic testing, and I got the list back. Maybe I've talked about this before, but 80% of those embryos were male.
Yeah,
and only 20% were female. And it just so happened that I ended up getting a female one transferred and had the girl. But yeah, I was always just like, what is that? So I wonder if there is also any stats on fertility drugs or like if that has anything to do with maybe creating more boys. I don't know.
There's also something that happens with older. I guess as you get older, you're more likely to have girls, which is interesting. But, you know, again, not holding up. Let me, should I do a quick Googling to see if there's an IVF and sex correlation?
Well, yeah.
IVF sex prevalence, maybe. Oh, here you go. Okay, this is from 2010 on BBC. IVF increases the chance of having a boy.
Ah, interesting.
Says women using IVF to get pregnant should be aware that they will be more likely to have a boy than a girl, says experts. So let's see. Australian researchers found the odds of a boy went up from 51 in 100 when conceived naturally, which is what we're talking about, right?
Right.
To 56 in 100.
Oh, wow. That's, yeah, that's big.
That's a big difference. Although yours is like way skewed.
Yes.
So but yeah, strange. I don't know. So I don't know. I feel like I've just seen so many more boys and I have no idea why. Although I feel like in LA, if the chances of you having a girl go up as you get older, in LA, so many people are, you know, geriatric pregnancies that, you know, it should be the opposite.
Oh, God, I just love that term.
I know, I know. I say it because it's funny. But yeah, but anyway, so the fact that I had a boy was statistically probable, I guess, on average. Interesting. I don't know.
Very.
I think it's interesting.
I do, too.
Yeah. Okay, so I actually have just one more real quick to tack on to this since we're talking about boys versus girls, or I should say XX versus XY generally because, you know, we don't really know their genders till they're older. But I found this study that I found kind of interesting and surprising, which was studying the, ready, gender differences in emotional expressivity and self-regulation during early infancy. Basically, They took 81 6-month-olds and their moms and videotaped them in their like face-to-face interactions and to see if there are any differences between the genders in infant and maternal emotional expressivity and regulation.
Okay.
And yeah, and you know, it's an actual scientific paper. We'll post it on our website, so maybe people who have more science background can read into it better.
So it's researching whether boys or girls are more expressive as infants?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Whether they have more expression in their face with their mothers, right?
Uh-huh.
And so they found that mother-son dyads had a higher synchrony scores mm-hmm. than mother-daughter dyads. So it's kind of interesting that the mother-son face expressions, I guess, were more in sync is from what I can tell.
Okay, so to me that sounds like maybe the baby boys are mimicking the mother's expressions more.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me mm-hmm. too. But I think that's interesting. And then also, though, they said, however, it took baby boys longer in repairing interactive errors, which I'm guessing means, I don't know exactly what that means, but so it's they're more expressive, but have a harder time fixing any problems. I don't know what kind of problems you would have.
I have no idea.
It's kind of fascinating, though. I mean, I love this idea. I just think it's so cute to think of a study. I want to watch the videos of the moms and the babies like making faces at each other,
yeah,
basically.
Like, what does that entail? Oh my gosh.
But they say there's like, they did something with a still face and then reunion play, which I love. I'm guessing reunion play is when the mom leaves the room and then comes back,
uh-huh.
which is one of my favorite things to see on my baby's face is when I like come into the room first thing in the morning.
Uh-huh.
It's so sweet. I can say my baby's very expressive.
Yeah, he really yeah. is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's also a ham. He looks in the mirror and just starts like mugging, like making funny faces. And it's
oh,
so funny.
Man,
oh, my God.
That's so cute.
So boys, you're more likely to have a boy, I guess. And they'll be super expressive, I guess.
Okay. There's all you need to know about the genders.
All you need to know. Anyway, so Shauna, what did you learn recently?
I recently came across an article. It's on goodhousekeeping.com. About the weirdest parenting advice that parents have received in the past 100 years. I have learned some interesting things that parents did or were told to do throughout the decades. So I thought maybe I'd share a few of them with you.
Yes.
So in the 1910s, moms were told not to breastfeed babies when the moms were in a bad mood because it would cause a colicky baby. So don't breastfeed when you're angry. Or upset, which I'm like, oh, whoops.
So when would you breastfeed then?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially in those first few months. Oh, my God.
Right? It's just like, oh, my God, when you're doing it round the clock in the middle of the night, I just feel like every baby would be colicky. So that's so wacko. Okay, here's another one. This I've kind of heard before. In the 1910s, left-handed babies were discouraged and right-handed babies were encouraged, and to the point where they would use like devices on the left hand to keep them from like using it so that the right hand would be more dominant. And that's just
aww.
So sad.
Poor babies.
I
that
know.
Is so sad. You know the word sinister means left, right?
What?
Like the Latin base.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the word sinister is either giving the impression that something harmful or evil is happening or will happen, or of, on, or toward the left-hand side.
Aw, poor lefties. I'm not a lefty. I'm a righty.
I'm a righty, too. I've always been jealous of lefties. It always seems so, like, cool and artsy to be left-handed.
Oh, totally. I mean, I worked hard as a kid to at the least be ambidextrous. I really wanted to write with my left hand.
Here's an interesting thing, too, that apparently sinister is the opposite of dexter. So everything is like swayed towards right-handedness because if you have dexterity, that's really saying that you're, like, right. You're on the right side of things, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over this left-handed bias. That's
yeah.
sad. Poor, but yeah.
Is your baby
yeah.
showing any preference yet? I know they say it doesn't really click until like 2 years old or something, but have you noticed?
That's what they say. When he was like 6 months old, I was like, he's going to be a lefty. He's always picking up his food, a spoon with his left hand. And now he like almost exclusively uses his right hand. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a righty, but who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Same with mine.
What about
same
you? Yeah. Him. Yeah.
Yeah,
he just always reaches with his right hand for toys or the food. You know, we're on finger food, so he's always, like, grabbing palms full of food and shoving them in his mouth with his right hand. So yeah, I guess he's dexterous.
Yes, he's dexterous. Here's another fun one from the 1910s. The baby's very first bath should be with some kind of fatty thing like lard or oil instead of water.
All right. You know, that's not so crazy, actually, now that I think about it, because you probably have all that, what was it called? Not Vernix. Vernix was the hair, right?
No, Vernix was the...
The cheesy substance.
The cheesy substance.
Yeah, so it is Vernix. There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, the white stuff.
Yeah, and they didn't have, like, you know, water wipes available at the time. I mean, they had, you know, cloths and water. But I bet an oil would probably get that grease off better.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Maybe there's something to that.
I think they might be onto something there. And you know what? I bet if they used like lard or oil or something, it's essentially like putting Vaseline on a baby.
Yes, they also mentioned Vaseline would be a good thing to bathe your baby in.
Too, so. Bathe. I mean, bathe is a lot. Can you imagine a tub full of Vaseline?
Oh my God. I feel like my baby would love that. She's always trying to go for the tub of Aquaphor and like just dip her hand right in there. Mm-hmm. If I don't, and then get it on everything.
I have discovered that you can get Vaseline out of like, you know, I have like modal shirts or whatever, like rayon or something. You know, those like drapey, nice shirts.
Yeah.
Well, we were using Vaseline for a while on my baby's face because it was getting a little chapped. And so then he would like face plant on my boobs and all my shirts had these like Vaseline stains. I discovered that just by like super pre-treating it with some liquid laundry detergent and then washing it on a pretty warm or hot cycle, it actually gets it out, which... hot tip for you.
That's a good tip.
I thought I was going to have to throw out a bunch of my shirts, so.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Moving on. I'm not reading every single one of these, by the way. Picking and choosing. But the 1910s were wild, so there's quite a few. Okay. So I'm going to just read this little quote here. First of all, there's an image of a small baby inside of a large man's shoe. Just sitting up looking around.
Okay.
It says, if you lived in this era, experts would probably encourage you to put a baby in an oversized shoe before they would allow you to cuddle your little one. That's because they believed handling your baby as little as possible was a good thing.
Hmm.
So snuggling, you know, cuddling, all that stuff I think was supposed to spoil your baby. So it's just go sit him up in a shoe or whatever is available
in
to
the shoe.
I guess they didn't have Mamaroos back then, so they're like, Daddy's shoe is big enough.
They didn't have Snooze. Yeah. No. Oh, poor babies.
I know. So sad.
Oh, no.
In the 1920s, an expert warned parents about giving their babies names that were too soft.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't give your baby a soft name.
What is an example of a soft name? Do you know?
Okay. Here's a quote from the expert himself, George R. Stewart Jr. with the University of California. He says, do not try for too much softness. Names like Lenora, Molly simply lack backbone. I kind of feel like Laura might lack backbone.
Do
Laura.
I lack backbone? Oh my God. Well, what about the unsinkable Molly Brown? She was unsinkable.
That's right. This guy doesn't know what he's talking
about.
This
guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Man.
This is like sort of like numerology too. Like, oh, you know, it creates some sort of path for your baby. If you name your baby like, I don't know. I don't even want to name soft names. What's wrong with this? I don't like this person. Let's move on. I don't like him.
I don't like this person either. In the 1930s, a government-issued pamphlet encouraged parents to start potty training their children the moment they're born.
Okay. Did it work?
Well, do we still do that?
I mean, we don't. It seems... Well, actually, that's not true. There are people who do that elimination communication.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, maybe they're onto something we're not. I know that... diapers are so wasteful, and I can see the benefit of not having to use them, you know, as long. But they are also pretty convenient in a way, you know?
They are. They're so convenient. I do feel like an asshole for using so many diapers.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Get on that elimination communication, you know. Just wedge that into our busy schedule. Okay, here we go. In the 1940s, thumb sucking was obviously very frowned upon. And so they came out with a product to to dissuade babies from sucking their thumb. And the brush-on nail treatment contained acetone, nail polish, and capsaicum to basically traumatize babies.
Like spice, right?
Yeah, like that hot pepper spice.
Oh, poor babies. Okay, so when I'm a terrible nail biter. I've always bitten my nails. I'm now sort of at peace with the fact that I think I'm just always going to be a nail biter. And if that's my bad habit, it's the thing I do. Fine. You know, could be worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've tried everything. And in college, I tried the bitter nail polish you put on. And oh my God, that stuff was so disgusting and didn't stop me from really biting my nails. Like, obviously I didn't want to put it in my mouth, but like I couldn't keep doing it because it would also like brush off. If you like wiped your lips with your finger after you ate, you'd get it on your lips. And like, I remember thinking, I was single at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, I can't have this bitter stuff on my lips. What if like a cute boy wants to kiss me?
Just at any moment, he could just appear and kiss my bitter lips.
In college, you never know.
It like, is
you
true. Could, Anything's
you could
possible.
Be studying. Anyway, so that never happened to me. But but I was worried, so I stopped using it. So poor babies.
I know. Poor little babies.
This is basically a list of how we've traumatized babies in the past.
Yeah, it really is. We should put a trigger warning on this. Okay, in the 1950s, experts believed that baby-proofing was a sign of lazy parenting and that a child can learn what not to touch with the help of their mother yelling at them to put stuff down.
I mean, it's probably true in a way. If you yell enough at your baby, they will probably learn not to pick things up. But I don't want to yell at my baby.
It's exhausting, too. Like,
I'm
just going to be the lazy mom that baby proofs and, you know, anchors my shelves and puts bumpers on corners because I don't have time to run around and, like, tell her not to do stuff.
But also, it's good that she can explore without constantly having to be redirected, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the more modern parenting idea nowadays.
Oh, Shauna, do you want to take a little bit of a break from all this trauma, all these traumatizing things? Take a little breather and then come back and you can tell me what, like, some, like, more modern ones are?
Yes, let's do it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor. And I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important. And therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although, of course, it is helpful in those situations, too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners, this episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the ringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's best sellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products. They're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at lolavie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
Lolavie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at lolavie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at lolavie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Okay, we are back, and Shauna has a few more questionable parenting tips from the past that she's going to share with us.
Look, Shauna, all I'm doing is trying to make y'all feel better about your own parenting moves now, right? Like, we wonder if we let our baby cry a little too long. We're fine. Look at what they did to these poor babies in the past.
At least you didn't put it in a shoe.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So speaking of crying, in the 1950s, one handout, this is quoted from goodhousekeeping.com, one handout from the time period told new mothers that a, quote, lusty cry was great exercise for one's baby.
Exercise?
A lusty cry? It was good
for
them.
I just don't know if, that doesn't sound appropriate.
Yes. Are you thinking like a sexual cry?
Well, I just don't like the word lusty in any context around my baby.
Yeah. Maybe I know. It was used differently back then.
Yeah.
But I do feel like my baby has lusty cries, but just like passionate, loud,
passionate.
Insane.
Yes. Yeah. She sure does. Yeah.
So she's getting a lot of exercise. I will say the doctor commented on her ab strength at her checkup. So maybe all her crying, not that I let her cry on and on, but when she does cry, it's very lusty.
It's inevitable. Yeah. For the baby's cry. Like, this is something I've come to realize. I think before I had a kid, I'm like, I'm never going to let them cry. I'm going to comfort them. And it's like, unless you're a, like, really, really, really attentive parent, like, every once in a while, you have to, like, they're just going to cry. Like, you know, you're home alone. It's time to make them dinner. You have to put them down somewhere safe that they don't want to be so you can just, like, warm up their dinner. Mm-hmm. And they're crying at you. Like, there's, you know, I guess I could hold him while, but you don't want to hold a baby while you're at the stove. You know, it's just like, mm-hmm. I don't know. The point is they're going to cry.
Yeah, you got to pick and choose your battles and they're going to cry.
So they'll get their exercise. So, okay, that's some good advice.
Yeah.
Get them their exercise.
All right, here's another one from the 50s. This is an advice for new mothers. Mothers who reported feeling sad after their babies were born were not directed to seek help, professional help. Rather, they were told to strip furniture. This is from a 1958 issue of Mother and Baby. So stripping the varnish off of your wooden furniture, you know, give yourself a little project. Specifically stripping furniture, I guess, is supposed to ease the baby blues.
It sounds like they wanted you to get a contact high from the fumes.
Right? That's what I was thinking.
I mean, not the worst advice, I guess. Like,
yes. It's probably
weird as hell.
Some female editor's secret way of like helping moms in need back then. Like, just strip some furniture, aka get high on the down low.
Go in the garage and huff some varnish.
Huff some
Sounds
varnish.
Great. Sounds really healthy. Yeah.
All right. I've just got two more quick ones. Moving on to the 60s. In 1962, Dr. Walter Sackett recommended giving black coffee to babies starting at 6 months of age.
Just what you need, a baby that stays up more.
I know.
What was his reasoning? Does it say?
I had to look up, like, what is this all about? Apparently, he encouraged introducing black coffee and tea to babies at a young age because he said babies get caffeine through soda and stuff. Like, most babies are drinking soda.
So much soda.
So better to give them something caffeine-ridden that doesn't have the sugar and stuff. So
I love how it's like, maybe don't give caffeine at all wasn't the option.
Yeah, or like
option.
Don't give soda. It's just like, instead of soda, give coffee.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oh, that's so amazing. I can only imagine Cece hopped up on coffee.
Jesus Christ.
Moly. And this last one, of course, I'm sure we're all at least somewhat familiar with this. In 1966, experts said the expectant mothers could safely smoke up to half a pack of cigarettes a day while pregnant.
Whoa. That's not recommended anymore.
No, not at all.
That's a lot of cigarettes.
Yeah, so.
When was that from, the 60s?
Yeah, 60s, 1966.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, in the 60s, they were still, I know my history of this from Mad Men, as one does. Did you watch Mad Men?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that show.
Well, you know, because, like, I think the first season is all about how they, is it the first season? One of the seasons, it's all about how they, like, decide to stop advertising for cigarette companies, right? Mm-hmm. It was, like, a big deal. And
The tobacco companies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. So I feel like there was evidence in the 60s that it was bad for you and causing cancer and all that stuff, but it was really suppressed by the cigarette companies.
Yeah.
They really, really didn't want you to know. So that sounds like some tobacco company propaganda to
me. Yeah, definitely. I also remember from that show, January Jones's character, I'm pretty sure she was smoking and drinking wine through her pregnancy.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. That and on The Crown. I was watching The Crown, and I was watching, like, Queen Elizabeth just having her scotch while she was pregnant.
Oh, man. Oh, how has humanity survived?
I know.
Anyway, so that's it.
Actually, before we go, I'm curious, because I am an 80s baby. Was there any from, like, the 80s that are scandalous?
Okay, yes. Here's one. In the 80s, there were two additional things that pregnant women were supposed to avoid. Computers and video games. Goodness.
Well, you know what? Back then, computer screens, I think, they had a little bit of radioactive material in them, if I recall. Those projector ones. Let me look that up. Let me just make sure.
But, okay, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah. Let's see. Radioactive computer monitor. Okay, here it is. So, since the advent of modern flat panel screens, the vast majority of computer monitors have few, if any, radiation safety concerns. However, older technology used with vintage monitors does have a potential for emitting certain types of harmful radiation.
Mm.
But the manufacturer said they were safe. But back in the day, before 2000,
mm-hmm,
most computer monitors were CRT-based monitors. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Radiation types. There are x-rays and ultraviolet light, apparently. So, you know, okay, here we are. Traditional CRT monitors used high voltages that generate x-rays. The voltages used in black and white monitors is much lower than those found in color models. So they said that it wasn't enough to cause problems, but now I can see, like, if you were pregnant and you were sitting in front of those monitors all day, like, maybe you shouldn't. Like,
that makes sense.
It seems so outdated to us. But you remember those giant computer monitors?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. But we're clear of that now, right?
We are. But I sat in front of a lot of them for many hours as a kid. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're cathode ray tubes. So
Yeah.
That sounds like some space age shit. But yeah, I think nowadays we can safely say that pregnant people can sit in front of the computer TV. Yeah. Well, that was fun and terrifying.
Fun and terrifying. We should all feel better about ourselves now. Should we move on to our weekly BFPs and BFNs?
I think we should. Okay, so we close every show with our big fat positives or big fat negatives of the week. Shauna, do you have a BFP or a BFN for us?
BFN.
Okay. Bracing myself. What is it?
This happened with my first daughter, too, and it's so frustrating. At a certain point, and this actually happened months ago probably, but I'm just now aggravated enough to talk about it. The diaper pail just does not contain the smell anymore.
Oh, really?
You know, it's like the poops just get more substantial.
The poops are big and stinky.
They're big and stinky.
Like,
and
let's not talk around it. Those poops stink.
They do. And, like, sometimes there's several a day, and my mom's like, well, could you just, like, go to the bathroom and, like, roll the poo into the toilet and flush it down and then put it in the... And I'm like, yeah, I remember doing that a few times when Al was a baby, and it's just... That's so tricky, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. I've got the baby, and then I walk, and, like, you hope, like, the poo, like, actually goes in the toilet. And so... And I'm lazy, so you know, I just wrap it up and stick it in the diaper pail, and these things purport to, like, contain the smell. And I've had mm-hmm. a couple different ones. My first time around, I used Ubi, mm-hmm. UBBI, and this
That's
time
the one
I'm using,
we have, yeah.
Yeah, this Munchkin one, and they just don't. I mean, it smells horrific, and so now I have to wrap up the diaper, I walk all the way across the house, out the back door, and put it straight in the dumpster. It's just an extra thing I have to do.
Mm-hmm. So we have problems with that with the Ubi a little bit, only if it gets extra full and only if you don't fully close it. Like, if we remember to open it and close it really fast, mm-hmm. the smell doesn't emanate. But mm-hmm. if you, oh God, I can tell, like, the minute I walk in the room, if Corey's forgotten to close the top of the diaper pail.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, you're just like, oh God. And then we're trying to empty it more often. But for me, it's a little bit harder to get out to the trash bin.
Yeah, like, yours thought are upstairs about doing that. And everything.
I have to go upstairs and out a locked gate and then, like, maneuver through this construction area. And it's just not something I can do. So we got to hold – we just have to empty the pail more, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've tried the Ubi and you've tried this Munchkin one. So I'm going to guess they all are flawed in a way.
Yeah. They're really good at containing newborns. Mm-hmm. But once they start eating, not newborns, like containing newborn babies, but the poops of a newborn.
Oh, you didn't place your newborn baby in the diaper pail. Got it.
Ooh, baby, you stink. Get in there. They're a lot better at containing the smell of, like, a newborn poop. But, yeah, once they start eating solids, it's pretty rough. And sometimes, you know, we pull the trash bins out front so the garbage collector can get them. And so instead of walking all the way to the sidewalk and putting the diaper in there, I just sometimes open the front door and, like, just drop the rolled up poop diaper, like, by the mailbox. And I'm just like, oh my God, my mailman probably hates me and thinks I'm a monster. But then you're just like, I just don't care. Like, I just, oh well.
You got to get out of the house, but you have other shit to do.
Yes, because then I'd have to go get my shoes and blah, blah, blah. So
yeah.
It is what it is. And that's our solution for now. Yeah, there you have it. What about you? What do you got this week?
I have a BFP.
Cool.
Mine is freeze-dried raspberries.
Ooh, yum. Cece loves raspberries. So what? Tell me about this.
My baby loves, loves, loves all kinds of berries, but especially raspberries. And my mom, I told her this was going to be my BFP, and she's like, you got to make sure you give me credit. I'm like, I'm going to give you credit. You found these. She's like, I found a good snack for him. She always wants credit. I'm like, you found a great snack for him, and I want, and so I have to give full credit to my mother. She went to Trader Joe's, and she came back with these freeze-dried raspberries, and they have, like, no additives or anything. They've just been, you know how freeze-dried things are. They're, like, crumbly and melt in your mouth, kind of. Mm-hmm. So at first I was like, oh no, you can't give dried fruit to babies because dried fruit is supposedly, like, one of the biggest choking hazards. And she was like, no, it's freeze dried. It's different. Uh-huh. And it totally is. So they crumble into, like, all, you know how raspberries are, like, a bunch of little pods, basically. Mm-hmm. So you can, like, break them up into smaller bits. And they are delicious. I tried them. They're really tart, but then I kept, like, eating more and more of them. Uh-huh. And my baby loves them. But the best part of it is it's a snack you can just keep in the diaper bag at all times.
Oh, that's
it's
so,
like,
good.
It's a fantastic emergency snack mm-hmm. because it keeps forever, basically. Probably not forever, but essentially, you know, it's better that it's not perishable. So you can just throw them in the diaper bag. And they also make freeze-dried strawberries that uh-huh. are good. They're, like, sliced. I find that I have to break those in smaller pieces because some of them can be a little chewy. But so I'd put, like, my freeze-dried raspberries and my freeze-dried strawberries in the diaper bag and just, like, call it a day. It's awesome.
I love that idea. We are definitely going to go get those.
Yeah. They're fun. He has fun, you know, especially when they break up into teeny little pieces because if his hand's a little damp, they kind of stick to him. And so he has like a fun time like picking them up without picking them up. And
do they make a mess? Like, does he need a bib when he eats them?
They're kind of dusty. Like, it doesn't make a mess, but I don't think you necessarily need a bib, but you'll get a little bit of like red dust here and there. Okay. You know what I mean? So you kind of brush it off. Mm-hmm. And if it, you know, once you get them in your mouth or you get them a little wet, then they just kind of turn back into raspberries, right? So there's a chance for some stainage there, but not, it's so much better than like a pouch. Like a pouch, you know, squeezes out and you get it everywhere. It's not like that. Yeah. It's very contained. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So get your freeze dry. I don't know. I'm sure they make them somewhere other than Trader Joe's, but that's where we found ours. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
I will say she also got the freeze-dried blueberries, but they're too like crunchy for the babies. You can't break them apart the way you can with the raspberries and the strawberries. So I would not recommend the blueberries.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my BFP. I think that means we're at the end of the show.
We are.
Wow.
Hooray.
Hooray.
If you want to let us know what your weekly BFP or BFN is, please reach out. Laura, where can everyone reach us?
We are on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. We also have a Facebook community group. It's a closed group, but search for Big Fat Positive Community, request to join, and I will add you right away. It's awesome. We have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com, and you can email us, contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com.
If you love our show, please consider rating and reviewing us on whatever platform you listen. It's very helpful for us, and we are so appreciative. And spread the word. If you know someone who's pregnant or a new parent, let them know about our podcast. Big Fat Positive is produced by Laura Burek, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye. A 1966 edition of an obstetrics tongue twister. A 1966 edition of an obstetrics handbook. A 1966 edition of an obstetrics.
Sorry,
this is a good outtake. A 1966 edition of an obstetrics textbook.